everybody, and welcome into episode number 377 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Moxie. I'm new here.
Hi, Moxie. Welcome to the show. So Moxie LaBouche is joining us. She has her own podcast called Your Brain on Facts, and also a book coming out also called Your Brain on Facts, which, Nick, to me, both of those things are right up our alley because we like interesting facts, and that's what Moxie does.
I mean, the laziness of naming your book after your podcast. I can't imagine. No, it's we did that too. Yeah,
our book is the full title is Your Brain on Facts, Things You Didn't Know, Things You Thought You Knew, and Things You Never Knew You Never Knew. That's the legit title of the book.
Yep. Yeah.
Except the whole front cover. When folks read your book, what do you want them to take away from it?
Just how much cool stuff we were never taught. Whether it's science, history, medicine, it's just like I would find these stories in my research and I'd be, why didn't I hear about this? Why did nobody tell me this stuff?
That's awesome. So where can folks get your book? Where can they find out more about you? We're starting off with the plug at the beginning, just so we make sure people hear it.
Get it right out of the way. They can pre-order by going to yourbrainonfacts.com/book. That'll port you over to Amazon. But please, by all means, reach out to your local bookseller safely, because they need your love now more than ever. And you can find the podcast on the same app you're listening to this fine show on.
Awesome. Well, very cool. So, I mean, no pressure, but I am very excited to hear your fact today because, you know, you're a professional, really.
We're all about learning stuff that we didn't know.
And I brought one of my favorites.
Ooh, I'm excited. But I want to save it because I don't want to kick off with you yet because I want to, it's a little bit of a teaser going on. So Nick, why don't you kick us off today? And also, most importantly, I want to hear you make a terrible segue, as is tradition on the show, from one fact to the other. So I got to make sure. Throw you into the fire there. But Nick, why don't you kick us off?
All right. So mine's actually pretty easy today. It's very simple and straightforward. It doesn't require a whole lot of background on it. What is the only nut that is not sold in its shell? What is the only nut that you cannot buy in the shell?
Should I just blurt it out? I'm very confident in my guess.
Ooh. If you know it, go for it.
I believe it is the cashew, because the cashew nut shell contains toxic oils.
That is 100% correct. This is what I get for bringing an easy question to a professional podcast.
You basically brought a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was. Yeah, I mean, technically it's a droop, but whenever you get into the technicality of those things, people start hitting me with bats. the cashew is the only nut that you cannot get in the shell. And Moxie, you are 100% correct. It's because the oils of raw cashews are toxic. So all cashews must be sold cooked.
Yeah, they have yet to create a machine that can thoroughly enough remove the shell and the oils. So it has to be done by hand. And cashews come from countries that don't have really super great worker protections or human rights policies.
Yeah.
Just consider that when you're making your next nut purchase.
Yep. 100%. And the whole, it's because we have people on the show from National Geographic, we have explorers, and the Botanic Gardens specifically, we learned about how there's no such thing as a nut, or almost no such thing as a nut. and that wasn't that the round we did on the very first Botanic Garden, is nut or not?
We had to change the exact wording of it. And then, you know, I just, you know, kept making those D's nuts jokes that is the
never get old.
Yeah. I know that was from many years ago, which I wasn't hip enough to be involved in the first round of that. And I'm not hip enough to bring it back around. Yeah, way, way back. So when I said years ago, I meant many, 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 many years ago.
That was one whole husband ago for me.
Wow.
Nick, how toxic are the shells? Like, if I touch it, will my hand disintegrate into dust a la Infinity Gauntlet style?
Yeah, exactly. That's what, if you even look too closely at a raw cashew, you're done. The basic premise behind it is that believe it or not, is an average thing that's out there, right? Like if you eat enough apple seeds, you'll die of arsenic poison. But the weird thing would be eating shovelfuls of apple seeds in order to have that much Is it cyanide? It's cyanide, having that much cyanide released from the apple seeds and going into it. It is more toxic than normal in the fact that handling even one raw cashew can give you rashes, and it's basically an irritant. But eating enough of them will be poisonous enough to kill you. The oils are that toxic. But that being said, you know, again, sitting in the forest eating pounds and pounds of raw cashews is a weird sort of image to put in your head.
Yeah. The cashew actually is a drupe and a fruit.
Yes.
So it's a cashew apple, and you can buy cashew apple juice. You can usually get it in Asian and maybe Latin markets.
Yep. So not much of an apple, but it is an apple.
I didn't know that at all, but I do kind of want to have a little brag about myself that I've made a, since this quarantine has been going on, I've made a delicious cashew pesto. So I will be thinking of that. And normally my cooking is dangerous and toxic enough, and now it's elevated to a whole other
level of toxicity.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You're serving it with that exotic blowfish that...
Which I learned about from an episode of The Simpsons.
Fugu from The Simpsons. There was a game show, kind of a game show, panel show on YouTube called Citation Needed. It's all these four YouTubers playing a game together. And one of them was about the Shanghai Fugu Agreement. And everybody was like, Simpsons, that's everything we know about Fugu we learned from The Simpsons.
It's actually shocking the vast number of things I learned about from The Simpsons.
Like the adequacy of monorails as a transportation system in a small to medium mid-sized city. Monorail system, we need the monorails.
Yeah, the one clip from The Simpsons that I use all the time is the Tiger Rock. Are you familiar with that, Lindsay?
Mm-mm.
So there's an episode. Yeah, there's an episode where a bear wanders into Springfield, and they put all of this tax money into the Springfield Bear Patrol with like helicopters and jets and drones and like police cars.
We're here.
Like,
we're here.
And they're like,
we don't want any more bears.
Exactly. And the Homer's sitting there and going, well, obviously the Bear Patrol is working because I don't see any bears. And Lisa goes, that's specious reasoning. And Homer, of course, goes, thank you. And she goes, by your logic, this rock keeps away tigers. And he goes, how does it work? And she goes, it doesn't work, but I don't see any tigers. And he goes, I'll give you $50 for the rock.
I don't remember that episode, but we'll definitely find the link and
yeah,
put in the link 100%.
That's the only scene I remember from that episode.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, so
my biggest tax increase in history, Dad, it's literally the smallest.
The smallest
tax
one, yeah.
And so, bonus fact, the Simpsons are canonically in Kentucky.
Yes.
Or wait, where was it?
Springfield.
It might have been Tennessee. For whatever reason, and I'm a grown-ass adult, I cannot keep Kentucky and Tennessee straight. I've never been able to. Basically interchangeable for me.
I just remember that MIMAL map and the Tennessee kicking the boot out. You guys know what I'm talking about with MIMAL? Yeah, so it's just the way to remember that state and that little tiny dude with his little hat going on for Minnesota and Iowa, the big old nose there in Missouri. He's got the belly button. It's just a perfect shape with the Louisiana boot. Oh, Mimal with his leg kicking out for the Tennessee there. He's in a little line, but I digress talking about Mimal. We'll just put a full map in the link dump there. Okay, so we learned what Mimal was. Moxie, are you going to take the segue from Nick's fact about cashews to yours, or do you want to run the risk that my segue will be, or the segue from my fact will be better?
I mean, I can do it, and I can do it either fairly elegantly, or I can absolutely manhandle it, whatever one you want me to do.
Ooh, let's see what you got. I'm gonna let you know, dealer's choice. You're our special guest here, so I will throw it to you to segue there from Nick's fact.
Okay, well, we have established that the oil from the cashew nut shell is bad for your health, and this is understood. Some things that are bad for your health, though, require a fair amount of testing and experimentation. Mm-hmm. Segways.
Right. Oh, nice.
Now, one such experimentation was on yellow fever.
Okay.
That was the answer to the question, Jesus. I just started, I just went right into it.
All right,
you know what? No, I can save this. Hold on. I can save this.
In that case, Lindsay, I want to guess first.
No, I can save this. Okay, so Some things, though, that are bad for your health require a great deal of experimentation and testing. Okay. Such was the case of one Dr. Stubbins Firth, born in the 1740s, I believe, and died in the 1820s, who was testing whether or not yellow fever, which was highly virulent and deadly at the time, was contagious. But how did he do it?
Ooh, how?
How did he do the test? So yellow fever is, correct me if I'm wrong, but yellow fever is mosquito-borne?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a virus.
Which they didn't know at the time. It is a viral disease that causes fever, chills, loss of appetite, nausea, muscle pain, headaches, and in many cases is fatal.
Right. Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. Not great at all. Okay, so you want to know how he was testing. This is the 18th century, or, you know, I would assume late 18th century there, if he's born in the 1740s. And so we want to know how he was testing the infection rate, basically, right?
Well, he wanted to prove that yellow fever was not contagious person to person, the way you might spread a cold, which his colleagues believed it was, because we have a whole bunch of people in one area coming down with yellow fever. They must be giving it to one another.
Okay.
So what method did he use to establish that yellow fever was not contagious person to person?
That is a dangerous game to bet on for that guy.
It's like Russian roulette.
Trust me. Yeah. Hey, this person definitely has yellow fever. So why don't you guys all just hang out in this like locked box together, or just like this very tiny little shed, and we'll see what happens.
You are half right on you're locked in a little shed.
Right. So they just took somebody they knew had it and stuck them in a shed with people they knew didn't?
It's a step further than that.
Oh, okay. A step further, like a step further from a shed or the locked in? Do they make them lock or lick each other?
Worse than that, but you're getting closer.
Worse than that.
Oh, worse. I told you I brought one of my favorite facts.
Oh, I don't know. Does it involve
prostitutes?
Not as far as I am aware.
Okay.
But hey, we're not here to kink shame.
Right.
Yeah, no kink shaming here. It's just more of a, you know, not exactly respected for a long, long part of history. So, yeah, okay. So maybe we're not looking for a specific job and occupation, not application. Occupation. Oh man, I'm lost, Nick. What do you think?
I've got. So they stuck people with yellow fever, or they stuck something with yellow fever in a box with people who didn't have it.
And the box was just one part of his whole testing system.
Okay.
but the fact that she said locked in a box was actually very close to one part of his testing system.
Okay. Huh. Did they test it? Was it just with people, or did they involve other creatures like putting mosquitoes in or other animals?
No, but a U.S. Army surgeon who later was doing work on yellow fever, he was breeding mosquitoes for the experiments, was then bitten by a wild mosquito and died of yellow fever.
It's
just the patients and Stubbins fur.
Hmm. Okay. I don't know.
And a frying pan.
And a frying pan.
No, I'm completely lost.
Yeah, you stumped us.
He ingested bodily fluids from the yellow fever patients.
Ooh.
He was really sure of his theory. So he started by taking vomit from a patient and putting it into a cut on his arm. And when he didn't come down with yellow fever, he's like, all right, let's keep going. So then he put a patient's vomit in his eyes.
Oh, that, Moxie!
And that didn't get him. I like the weird stuff. and that didn't get him sick. So he expanded what bodily fluids he was testing with to include blood, saliva, sweat, and urine. And at one point he sat in what he called a vomit sauna. This is a little locked in the box thing. So a little enclosed space full of heated vomit fumes, which he said gave him a headache, but didn't otherwise affect his health. And then he just started eating it.
I have never been as dedicated to anything in my life as this guy was to this theory.
No. gross. Yeah,
so he hung his career on his book, A Treatise on Malignant Fever, with an attempt to prove its non-contagious nature. But we do know now it is contagious, but it requires a vector, in this case, a mosquito.
Yeah, so here's the real question. When he published this paper, did everybody read it and go, okay, that's good enough. Like, we accept your findings. Just stop testing.
Well, he did all the publishing after he finished all of the testing. So it was too late to stop him.
Don't test anything ever again. We're good. You've made your contribution to science.
Okay. You know, I think there's something to be said about certainty, right? Like, I am very certain that, you know, I just got married and I am 100% certain that this is the person I want to be with for the rest of my life. Right. I don't think that I've ever been, and that was probably the most certain I've been about anything in my entirety of my life. And I don't think that I could see myself ever being so confident and certain in a fact that I would ingest vomit in someone else's vomit with yellow fever.
A sick person's vomit.
Yeah. Into my body to prove a point. And I do a lot of things out of spite, you know?
Right. Yeah. If anybody would, Lindsay, I think it would be you. But yeah.
Thank you.
I don't know that anybody should go that far. I mean,
there's actually a splendid history of doctors testing on themselves. A doctor by the name of Marshall was convinced that ulcers were caused by a bacteria, whereas the medical establishment believed it's stress, spicy food, acidic food, things of that nature. And Marshall was so convinced that it was the Helicobacter pylori bacteria that, without permission from his hospital, without notifying his wife that he was going to be doing this, he drank a culture of Helicobacter pylori bacteria. And sure enough, when he had his stomach examined, it was pre-ulcerative. Wow. And he was able to turn the whole thought process about ulcers right on its head.
That's amazing. And here I am thinking that ulcers were caused by my ex.
and even knowing that, I still will say of certain people that they give me an ulcer.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, that is bravery that I do not know and cannot fathom, I suppose. But I think that, Nick, that kind of leads into a secret phrase. So the secret phrase for today is, you better be sure. So that secret phrase is, you better be sure. I know that there's still a few people playing around the country that are using the secret phrase for bonus points. So hi to everybody that's still using it. But you better be sure is going to be your secret phrase today.
Yeah.
And I think that that's fair.
And Lindsay, I now would love to hear your transition from vomit consumption into whatever your fact is.
Well, Nick, I actually do have a segue. So buckle up, Moxie and Nick, just buckle up. So originally, I was inspired by the recent SpaceX NASA launch, right? That's kind of been a big thing in the news. And so I was interested in finding some specific space facts. And now you're saying, Lindsay, how does your space fact relate to Moxie's bodily fluid one? Well, I found out a story where one of the first folks, John Glenn, obviously the first American to orbit the Earth, he was mystified by these fireflies that he saw looking out of his window. And he was thought that it could be maybe extraterrestrial. Like, you know, that's kind of the theory of, like, what are these lights that look like fireflies? What is going on when he was up there orbiting the Earth? They couldn't figure it out until they sent up the next American, who touched the side of the ship and vapors released from the ship that were, you know, the astronaut's bodily fluid. So John Glenn, while he was up there, reported back saying, oh my gosh, these things, these fireflies looking things are so beautiful. And it turns out that it's just glowing particles of his bodily fluid. And so thus, that is my segue from the bodily fluid consumption to
space.
Figure out, yeah, to yellow fever, to John Glenn's floating bodily fluids while he was in space. And I think that might be my best segue ever.
That's absolutely legit. A lot of astronauts have said that when they jettison the urine, it immediately freezes and it refracts the sunlight and sparkles. And they've said it's actually beautiful to watch the urine being unloaded.
Yeah. So my fact is about John Glenn, not the pee and firefly related at all, but he was the oldest astronaut when he flew into space, not in 1962, obviously, but he was the oldest astronaut in space when he went back in later in life. So my question to you is, how old was John Glenn in years when he went back up into space and became the oldest astronaut so far in history? So how old was he?
Price is Right rules?
Yes, always.
Always. Yeah. So, okay. So Moxie, this was recent, and I'm putting that in air quotes because, you know, the older you are, the more recent things are. But I remember this happening.
Yeah. I'm trying to picture what he looked like and try to guess from there, but I'm terrible guessing ages.
Yeah, this was right after high school. This was during college. So this was the ultra late 90s.
Was it that far back?
I think so. Well, okay, let's work this backwards for a second. He went up in the space shuttle, right?
Yes.
And there hasn't been a space shuttle flight since 2010.
Take your word for it.
Okay. That was one of the big things about the SpaceX thing is it was the first U.S.-based space flight in almost a decade. It's been like 3,200 days or something like that. So it had to happen. And if I remember it being after high school, that's somewhere between 97 and 2010. So now we've narrowed that period down to a 13-year period.
We've narrowed all of human history down to 13 years.
Yes, exactly. I do remember it. I remember it as being during college. So that narrows it down even further to turn of the century.
I'm thinking he was probably in his maybe early 30s, his first go.
Yep.
So which would have made him, having been born sometime in the 30s.
Yeah, late 30s or early 40s.
So from there to the turn of the most recent century, I'm going to go under for fear of going over and say 67.
67.
Just because that's how old my mom is. My right. Benchmark for old people.
So you're putting him, so if you're putting him at 30 in the late 60s, 32 in the late 60s, you're putting him 1935 as a birth date. And 67 years would put the launch of 2002. I'm going to go under. I'm going to say 1 year old. No. I'm going to say he was in his late 50s. So I'm going to say 56.
Okay, 56. Both of you guys way off. Well, Moxie, you win by Price is Right rules being over. Nick's mad. I'm excited that I stumped both of you. This is like a medal of pride for me. But yeah, he's 77 years old. So you had the timeline correct, Nick, that it was in 1998. He went back up into space. He was considered a payload specialist. So more so of a passenger, but he convinced NASA and said, hey, test on me. Like, I am an elderly person. The age deterioration in humans is very similar to what happens to people's bodies when they go into space. So he's like, hey, use me as somebody that you can not necessarily experiment on, but you can study the effects of how space treats somebody that's already having age deterioration. He was, you know, obviously a senator for many, many years, but was always a little bit frustrated that after 1962 and after his orbit, he wasn't really allowed to go back into space anymore, in the sense that NASA and, you know, JFK and the other presidents at the time were like, hey, it's more important for the space race for you to be safe and be a hero and go around the tours and keep morale up than it is for you to for risk to us putting you back up into space and something going wrong. So he was eager to get back into it. But 77 years old, everybody on the crew said he was absolutely fantastic. He did the housekeeping stuff. He didn't consider himself a celebrity, but really cared about the science. But 77 years old.
Which means he was born in 1922?
1921, yeah.
Jeez. I'm more surprised by the year that it happened, because I thought I remembered seeing like a meme to the effect of when John Glenn gets back, everybody put on gorilla masks, like a Planet of the Apes joke. But... But yeah. Like memes were still in their, like, not even infancy. No, they were still zygotes in 1998. Yeah. It wasn't really a thing yet.
Yeah, I thought that was. I saw that recently with the new SpaceX astronauts. Right, everybody put on your monkey suits for when they come back.
Yeah, but he was. It was 36 years from his first orbit in 1962 to 1998. So 36 years, and you know. a long time had passed. So my follow-up question, who was the youngest American in space? So who was the youngest American in space so far to date?
Oh.
I wouldn't know them if they walked in here right now. I'll be honest with
you. Yeah.
Unless it's Sally Ride.
It is right. Sally Ride.
That's exactly who I was going to guess.
I'm realizing this, though, as I'm saying it out loud, that I did not check the ages of the astronauts that just launched last week. They didn't come up on my search naturally, but I was like, ooh, I should double check those. But I didn't. But yeah, Sally Ride, as of my information, the youngest American at 32. And then a USSR astronaut was in space at 25 years old. But super interesting. And I am glad that I stumped you. So yeah. 77 for John Glenn.
And I think you're good. Yeah, you're good on the ages of the guys who just went up because both of them have been up before. So
they
can't be younger than they were before.
Okay, good.
How are we supposed to respect that space program if they sent up Bob and Doug?
Right. Yeah.
But there is, of course, that one factoid I think is the first fact everybody thinks of when they think of Sally Ride, which was when she was talking with the engineers because she was the first woman in the American space program. First woman who's going to be in space for any length of time. And one of the bodily functions that they have to deal with for the female astronauts is menstruation. And they asked her if 100 tampons would be sufficient for the week.
Right. Yeah.
which is not as bad as the sexism in the space program get. Because when Valentina Tereshkova was doing a press junket, she was the first woman the Soviets had put in space, she actually came to the U.S. And so she did like a press conference through an interpreter. And they were asking her heaps of inappropriate questions to the level of what color underwear are you wearing?
Oh my God.
And look, I don't want to paint with a broad brush here, but Russian women are well hard. Do not piss them off. Do not make them angry. Okay. Yeah. That she didn't get down off the dais and knock that guy out is the most interesting footnote to that story.
Yeah. 100%. And I think the lesson from today's podcast is more women in STEM.
I still can't get over that this is nothing to do with women, but I still am just picturing this guy sitting in a cell and just bodily fluid, and I'm just
vomit sauna. Yeah.
Still on Seven's first. Yeah.
If we had
vomit sauna,
if we hadn't used the secret phrase already, it would definitely be vomit sauna. So
yeah, but you gotta, you know what, Nick, you just gotta be sure if you're headed to a vomit sauna. Yeah, you better be sure. If you're going to a vomit sauna. But we're going to wrap up this episode today. So Moxie, again, Your Brain on Facts, you can get the book pre-order on Amazon or at your local bookstore, Call Away. And also, of course, the podcast episodes of Your Brain on Facts premieres every Tuesday. So We Don't Know Either premieres on Monday. Your Brain on Facts is every Tuesday. So you can get all of the really fun, interesting, random information that you need to impress your friends and family. But thanks, Moxie, so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was great fun.
Yeah. So this has been We Don't Know Either. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Moxie, but I'm not usually here.
Yeah, but you'll be back again someday with more interesting facts. And of course, We Don't Know Either.
Bye.